Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD Podcast, where we interview local San Diego business leaders who are leading beyond profit and making a significant impact in the communities and businesses they lead. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, where we help companies unlock their greatest potential through a unique strategic planning process and project implementation. I want to give a shout out to the community business organization to support the podcast, the BBB, Conscious Capitalism San Diego, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're now on YouTube, so please follow, subscribe, and make a comment so we can build this community of purposeful leaders. Enjoy the show.
Caregiving isn't just about managing tasks. It's about showing up with love, patience, and understanding. That statement comes from today's guest, Lori Edwards-Tate. Lori, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Lori is the president and CEO of At Your Home Family Care, the premier San Diego home care organization providing caring, reliable, and affordable non-medical home and community-based care and private duty services for seniors, disabled adults, veterans, and persons with developmental disabilities throughout San Diego County. Lori's been the recipient of many awards, but most recently, At Your Home Family Care won the prestigious Better Business Bureau's Torch Awards for Ethics. She's been at this for over 41 years and is having a huge impact in our community and is here to share the inside story today. Lori, ready to do this?
I am.
Round two.
Where would you like me to begin?
I had a little oops. We had round two of this program at the moment here, so bear with us. Yeah. For when I start in the beginning, what's the big why? How did this all come to be?
Okay. It was probably the last few years when I understood my why.
Yes.
When I found myself so driven at a very young age to be involved in business or work, it was natural for me. I really wanted to do that. And I took a lot of science classes in high school. I did science fair projects countywide. So I really thought maybe I would go in that direction. So I did an internship at an area hospital. I could have graduated early, but I decided I would like that opportunity. And it was wonderful. I became hired upon graduation. And there I learned responsibility. Showing up on time, and the fact that when we work with patients, with people who are dependent upon what we as healthcare providers do, we need to ensure that we are accurate. We are not really afforded the opportunity to make mistakes. It could have great impact on people's lives. But I gained exposure to the child side. We had cancer kids who came up every week, and that was very heartbreaking. I learned about the types of disabilities by going to children's ICU, going to the major portion of the hospital itself with adults who were ill, the maternity wing, a surgical wing, a pathology, of course, and also the mental health component. So it was really a great opportunity to learn about diverse issues having to do with the healthcare sphere.
So what were you thinking? Nursing, becoming a doctor? Like what was your mindset at that time?
Well, I didn't know.
Like you're exploring.
But yes.
But you like the environment.
Well, I guess so.
40
it
years
wasn't
later.
Like I was plotting, I'm going to end up here. I honestly, you
nobody
know,
does, Jeff,
it was an adventure and a process.
Of course.
And it's so funny because, you know, most of us, when we grow up, everybody says, you know, your family or your educational institution, what are you going to be when you grow up?
I'm still trying to figure that out, Lori.
Well, and you know, I am too. I feel that really it's really a journey. It's really a process. So from having done really good work, especially at a young age, being around the physician community, having that level of responsibility, learning things I never would have imagined, kept me propelling forward into the career I was able to have with not yet having my college degree completed. So then I was going through school, junior college, and
so
working
you're doing school
full-time.
And work at the same time.
I did.
Okay.
And
something you said about that.
And the junior colleges were what was available, and then eventually ended up in an evening degree program, and then completed my bachelor's at Cal Poly, a degree from National University, and then later
was that in the sciences.
It was business.
Business, okay. Mm-hmm.
And then later went into, received a master's degree from Chapman in human resource management. And again, people-oriented and organizational development. And I absolutely loved it. I loved, number one, it was so people-oriented. Two, what really constitutes leadership, understanding that, studying that, what are the best models for productivity, encouraging positive worker behavior, learning models of how organizational charts are formed, the importance of an organizational chart in any type of, whether profit, nor-profit, nonprofit, big or small. I chose one that I liked in particular, and I believe it has served me well over the years. And
when you say organizational chart, we're talking roles and responsibilities, or am I missing something there?
Well, in the business, it tends to be very top down. You Correct. Have the CEO, the leader, and then all of a sudden you have the people under the leader and under the leader and, you know, and so forth, right to the bottom. I liked the one that was called normative. I don't know if the name has changed since I went to grad school, but it's where it, the organization, there is a leader and there are key roles. There's many roles, but the communication flows throughout the entire organization. Mm. When I started, and you're going to laugh at this, I've had four companies. Okay.
Oh, you have?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know this story.
Yeah. It's quite a story and quite a journey. So I had two sole proprietorships. And after working for others for a while, I realized that I really needed to look at how to best take care of myself over time. I did not like politics of office politics. I would have to say at that time, especially, women were really almost forced into administrative and secretarial roles. I didn't like that. Ageism was very much a real aspect of life. And I think to some degree it still is, though I'm seeing a lot of positive movement. So I determined that my best option was being in business for myself.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. And, you know, and then it's a matter of, well, what type of business? And then what do you do? And, you know, it's been a real adventure. So my first entree into I had a secretarial service for a while. I graduated into a service that helped seniors provide their non-fiduciary money management. I've been doing that service within my current organization for a number of years.
So that's still going on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so then I started a nonprofit. Actually was given a nonprofit articles of incorporation as a Christmas present from an attorney friend. And I thought, well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, it was. It's like, okay, now that I have this, what do I do?
Yeah.
So the bottom line is I started with basically no money. And I learned about opportunities within our local government to provide home and community-based care before people even knew about home and community-based care. So that's what gave me my start. But the interesting thing about it was I really didn't know what I was doing. I really didn't know what a non-licensed home care person did. And, you know, I basically learned as I went. In my office, Jeff, I have three little red books. And I started my business without the benefit of some of the higher tech available today. By writing things, by meeting with people, I have all of the notes I took.
Wow, nice.
And actually developed my first staff by getting donated office space from banks with a banker's box. And I went around the community and got my first staff. And then started up with some funding and from a local government. And within 3 months, I had my first office.
Wow.
So I did that for a number of years, had my own nonprofit board of directors with some really fine people, including an attorney, grew a bit, and the nonprofit. Then I started a for-profit At Your Home Family Care, and for a few years had
So similar both. Services, one being for-profit, one being nonprofit?
Well, basically all home and community-based care.
Okay.
That's
your niche.
Well, it seems to be. What this is providing this assisted living in the home, the non-medical. Now, at this time, it was not a licensed type of entity or organization in the state of California. So I became the first person elected to our state association board to serve on the board of directors representing the home care aid industry. So I had the rare opportunity.
You're like the pioneer.
Yes, I took all the benefits and all the hits because, to be honest with you, the medical community looked at that as like, who are you? What do you do? Are you a janitorial service? How can you provide unlicensed care? And so forth. Well, the standards within the contract help define that. I mean, helping people with the activities of daily living, homemaker chore, assistance with bathing and grooming, companionship, respite care, relief to the primary caregiver so they may leave their home. I developed a plan that was new to San Diego called door-through-door transportation, where we pick the individual up in the worker's car, we'll help them get dressed if that's needed, and then take them to their appointment, stay with them, and take them safely home. Some people are not able to be in vans or taxis or dial-a-ride and need help with that. So that's another service we provide. We provide non-fiduciary money management. I have a designated person for that. And we provide making certain that the bills are paid, the checkbook is reconciled, and so forth. So we also have the companionship component built within that. Our job is to ensure that the care is customized to every single client we serve. We have a broad range demographic of individuals, of ages, of cultures, of diagnoses, of home environments, and we have to adapt and create our own care plans and ensure that our home care aides are prepared to customize care for each person we send out in any region within San Diego County.
Wow, that's a lot. And be able to match up the right skill set to the right needs is not simple, for sure. So how many folks you got working for you?
I think we're at about 100 home care aides.
Wow.
They're largely per diem. Some of them like working more hours. Some of them don't want to work more hours. They're really allowed to make those choices. Some of them, our retention rate is very high. The thing that's the backstory to this, if I may, is that through that process of being a part of developing an industry, we eventually went into a license through the Department of Social Services. So in 2016, this industry became licensed by the state.
Okay. And we've raised the bar. There are some standards now.
And I'm proud to say we were fully approved out the gate. Fully licensed from the start, have maintained that full licensure status without corrections throughout the duration. And, you know, I honestly wasn't a fan of regulation for a non-medical model. What I was a fan of was a very significant national model of accreditation. My vision was the portability, like a home care aide who works here now may want to move to another state where it was portable.
Right.
Those criteria were portable. But what won in California, of course, was a license model. That was the choice of our state association. So what's good is that we can't employ home care aides who are not registered, which means they have to meet certain training and other criteria.
Well, I can see that. I mean, you're going into people's homes, and I mean, there's a pretty high bar, I'm assuming, in regards to the role they're playing, right? So,
well, I can brag about this and say that we were already doing that. That's what I really feel very good about it when we talk about ethics, is that we had a high standard already. And then the other piece to this is the state requires background checks being done by them through the live scan process. So once people sign up, then with that, which is required for hiring, and we personally interview everyone. I just don't feel comfortable not meeting them, talking with them. We also have our own training programs and continuing ed, which we make available online, but we like that initial interaction with our people.
Well, it's so important, right? Especially in the business that you're in. I mean, you just really want to be able to say eyeball to eyeball who I'm talking to.
Exactly. Yes.
So how do you find the right people? Because it seems like it takes the right kind of, you got to have a skill set, but also the right heart to make things out. You're making a face on that one, right? Well, it's always tough finding good people, but it seems like the bar's got to be pretty high for what you're looking for.
I would say so. People come from either they walk in the door and they're already registered, already providing this kind of service, but you hit upon something that is really fundamental, the right heart. We could have somebody who's been working in retail or some other industry walk through the door, and we find out, well, why are you here today? What is the purpose of your application? What drove you here? Like you asked me, what was my purpose? What started me? And so everybody has their why. So learning about their why is very important. Many times we find that we have people with family members they've needed to help. And that compassionate care, is really heart and parcel, because fundamental, because oftentimes we end up working with these clients for a number of years. Our retention rate with our workforce has tended to be about 50% over a period of 5 years, which is very high. Our work comp rate is very low. So in order to help people, we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard. It's like, for example, I use this one in the office a lot. Okay, so if you were a brain surgeon and you had to sneeze and you were in there operating on somebody's brain and a scalpel, you know, just cut the wrong thing at the wrong time. Oh, I'm sorry, I sneezed. And now you're compromised. You have lower cognitive ability or mobility because of what I did, but I had a reason why I couldn't do it. I don't believe in that in healthcare.
Yeah, you can't afford to do that.
No. We have to have higher mindsets, higher senses of responsibility on any level of healthcare. And now, with the fact that we're probably losing a lot of our physicians to retirement, and we're going to have, and there's lower enrollments in the physician category, we have more educational programs opening up for physician assistants and nurse practitioners. We're seeing paradigm shifts in how medicine is provided, and I'm a non-medical provider. But with that, and the growth in the aging population, the growth in developmental disabilities, and we help disabled adults short term, having help at home is to enable people. It's to help them. It's to help them maximize their own potential within the sphere of their home environment.
Which is where you want people to be able to operate, right? You don't want to be in hospitals or in some, I don't know what you call it, nursing homes or whatever, right? You want to be in your home. So, but it's difficult for family members of people, you know, I got to go to work, I got kids, you know, I can't necessarily take care of my parents or whatever. So having that sort of resource there available to you that you know you can count on to make things happen is awesome. So business is up apparently though, right? Unfortunately, well, as all us boomers get older and need some help. And
I think that we're going to see a lot of growth in the dementia side of things. I mean, you know, cancer, orthopedic problems, and all of that. At the same time, we're seeing something I'm very happy about. And that's the recognition that we are empowered to lead healthier lives. It's not that bad things aren't going to happen to us. They are, but I mean, the resiliency, the understanding that we have control over what we eat, if we smoke, if we drink. I mean, if we are willing to exercise, if we're willing to
take
do
some
certain
responsibility
things,
for yourself here, right?
Like doing the best where you are. What is that saying, Jeff? Maybe you can help me with this. I don't recall where I learned it, but it was basically doing the best where you are with what you have. And that's going to vary throughout our lifetime,
yep.
Whether it's financial or personal or otherwise. It's the whole idea is doing the best you can where you are.
So I have a question.
Yes.
So you got this large crew. They're out doing some very serious work, right, inside people's homes, trying to provide the right kinds of services. How do you manage that? Like, I have a small crew. I have this little side project where I have this cleanup project I do in Pacific Beach where I live, and I got some homeless folks that work for me, and I'm always going, it's about trust. It's about my ability to send you guys out in the truck and know you're going to go do what you're supposed to do today, right? That's kind of like one of my biggest things. How do you have such a large crew? How do you know checks and balances, that things are happening the way you want them to happen.
Remember, I discussed the issue of the normative organizational chart some point in conversation.
So we'll circle back to that. I want to know more about that.
Okay. So organizational charts tend to be in a business sphere highly structured. It was really interesting. I was going through grad school when I was starting up the nonprofit. So I thought that was really cool that I had the benefit of learning about leadership, leadership styles. I could take self-evaluations about that, like who am I as a person, as a leader? You know, where are my strengths or weaknesses? You know, I thought I was going to end up being a high school teacher or something. I did become a junior college teacher, by the way. So I did teach JC. I taught human resources, local community colleges for a while. Then I got too busy and I had to give that up. But while I was going through grad school, it was an opportunity to look at, while I was teaching, what types of research, what types of the, you know, learning about the industrial society, you know, the industrial revolution that we had in America. When we started becoming industrialized, what did we learn from what produces the best with people? What was it? What were those keys? So I'm not saying that I'm perfect. I'm not saying that my company is, because I feel like we're never doing enough. We're never good enough. We use that normative type of open communication all the way around and from bottom up, top, bottom. And we provide various tools and mechanisms by which the clients have a voice, by which the workers have a voice, by which they all hear from us all the time. We're available to them all the time. We have after hours and weekends. And so we're finding some of the new technical tools to be especially helpful. Our system has been automated before it was popular for home care organizations. We actually had someone with great capacity from an IT standpoint study my company, the words, the issues, the whole thing, and developed our system by which we operate, which helps us to maintain documentation, helps us stay on top of the daily activities. So that's really important. We also have a high retention rate of our staff. I keep my administrative staff office small. I'm available all the time for my people. And we establish ongoing procedural changes department by department. I believe in cross-training. So if somebody's ill or on vacation, we're not left with customer calls in need of something. Well, look, well, I know I'm going to have to call you back in a week. You're just going to have to hobble around the house or not be able to feed yourself before we, you know what I'm saying? In other words, we have to be there for people all the time. That's what we signed up for.
Right, right. You got to have the skill sets needed at all times, regardless of what it is.
Right.
Is it common to have more than one employee working at a site, or is it typically one person is kind of the person?
Well, that's a very good question. It depends upon the case, the client needs and affordability, or the authorization from one of our community partners. So we have to follow the authorization. We have to look at the affordability factor for the private pay market. Is the family part of the equation? They're volunteers. So depending on the hours of service, we sometimes do have more than one home care aide. Sometimes we only have one, and we have to customize that.
So give me a story. Give me that story you love to share. I'm sure you got lots and lots of them, but like, what's that like heart-wrenching story? Like, you know, here was the situation. We were able to apply this service, and yeah, this is what we're all about.
Well, I can honestly say that when my father was at the end of his life, and I mentioned in conversation he was a disabled veteran, and I learned about resiliency and respect and what it really means to have a positive mindset, what people are capable of doing. So I feel, first of all, that our job is to have compassion, but our job is to also respect everyone as we find them, no matter what that might be.
Meet people where they're at.
Exactly. see beyond the disability or the problem, because in life we never know. And so my biggest success stories was when I was able to help my own family. Mm. I knew I could, when my dad needed help, call upon someone from my own company with total confidence. When my mother needed help several years ago, I could call upon my company, and I had a couple of great people, and it made her life so happy having that support at home. Story about my mom, very independent-minded, didn't want to leave her home, and had help and then had certain diagnoses and certain problems affiliated. And basically, I promised her that she could stay at home as long as she wanted to. And she was there. She had a walker. She did not want somebody 24/7, though it was recommended medically. And I said, Mom, this is what you need to do. I won't do it.
One of your toughest clients, the mom.
Well, you asked me the reason why I feel, and I'm bringing it up as a personal story. My standard is I want to feel that I have a team that I can send out to my family.
Yes.
I bring that issue up frequently. That's my standard. That's the way I feel about it. It's very hard in a fast-paced business where so much is demanded and there's a need to have an influx of clients to survive as a business, right? I mean, let's face it. We have to make money. We have bottom lines. We have all those expenses to pay. We have all these compliance issues. So we need clients, and we have to market for those. But let's step back, and then we have to say, these aren't widgets. These are human beings. These are lives. So it's a whole different idea. So I would say it's purpose-driven. It's intentional. It's something where we realize that it's definitely service above self. I have many stories. I have a story where we had a staff shortage at one time, and one of my longest held employees, who I totally prize, and I hope she gets to hear this, was on vacation in Hawaii. I had to have her spend time while on vacation to literally help train a replacement. Mm-hmm. And she did it. So there's sacrifice when you help other people. Now, that was a very unusual situation. And you can say what sustained you in a business over so many years. There's no doubt the leadership aspect, the vision, people believing in you, having the heart for it. One cannot fake that with other people. You either have it really genuinely or not. I've seen so many organizations start up, and it's been frustrating to me because it's competition, and it's, you know, when you have to have have a competitive side, corporate pride in what we do and all of that. And there's that element, and I would, you know, be a liar if I said that it wasn't existent even in me. But on the other hand, what you want is quality for your community. You want the best people. You want to refer to the best people. But I feel a great sense of responsibility for the people we serve.
I can see that. Love it.
Oh, thank you.
That's why you won the Torch Awards too, right?
Well, yes.
So speak about that a little bit. I didn't have a chance to see you at the actual Torch Awards. I was there. And I swung by your table while some of your crew was there, and they're going, man, Lori is so excited about winning this. So maybe talk about a little bit the Torch Awards, what it means to you and all that.
Well, I had won as a finalist about 2 or 3 years ago, and I have that in the office. And the beautiful new one that I'm in, an actual real person, is in my office. Why did I go again? Out of principle. I determined that I really believe, you know, we've been A-plus rated for years. We were a finalist. Then we became a BB for Good accredited organization, which is rare. In a local chamber, we received Leader of the Year in the medium-sized firm. We're a Think Local First organization. I'm a native San Diegan. I really, from the beginning of this whole adventure, the big thing with me, too, was I needed to have impact in my hometown.
I love that.
So many people worry about, oh, am I going national? Am I going on the stock exchange? Am I doing this or doing that? And I determined that wasn't my goal. My goal was to be the best in what I did here at home. And never expected the growth, the population, the growth in all age groups. And seeing a lot of developmental disabilities, more and more of those, living longer, changes the scope. So why did I do the Torch Award? It was really the principle of the thing with me. I had to have it. I really felt that that would be a cornerstone. And by the time, it was very interesting. I'll share my journey if you want me
to. Sure, go for it.
Received some nice awards, been our business, San Diego Business Journal. I have throughout the duration and proclamations from various electeds over the years. It's been a banger year for us. And Leadership Award, Women in Healthcare, Top 25, many things like that. At the time I started the business, only 7% of women were business owners, startup. It's very rare. I'm also, this is not why I'm here right now, but also elected to an area hospital board. I'm on my seventh year, my second term of 4 years. Healthcare, very important. Integrity, extremely important. That also, how can I say this, that between those kinds of experiences, serving on various committees, American Lung Association, FACT Board, American Heart Association, Women of Red, so many different things like that. And you realize that people believe in you. They believe in you. How vulnerable members of the community truly are, how people believe what they read. Now, why would I let that down? I remember kind of doing the circle thing, if you don't mind, because I am a storyteller. When I got my first contract with a local government agency with my nonprofit, so I went to the government agency where there were other, you know, elected officials and the American flag, and I don't want to sound corny, but it was an exposure that I wasn't accustomed to. And then you have to stand up, say Pledge of Allegiance. And I know that even sounds rare even today. But I made up my mind to one thing, that I would never let my community down. Mm. I made up my mind then. And I made up my mind that I would use the funding in an appropriate way. That if I let people down, I was letting myself down. And I was letting people who believed in me down, and I couldn't do it. So I've had difficult times in business. This has not been a cakewalk, no matter how meaningful. It's been a lot of mindset of, I'm going to do this, you know, where, gosh, am I going to make payroll? There were times that I didn't get paid. So the first 2 years, I didn't even get paid. I was teaching while I started up. I had no money. I had to start everything basically from the kitchen table. So when you build something like that, You go through hard times, you go through challenges, things that are out and out unfair, that almost put you out of business, and you're wondering what you're going to do sometimes with that. You learn very quickly, am I really walking my talk?
Right, right.
How deeply do I believe this? And, you know, there have been, case in point, COVID. Okay. So now you know more about the fundamentals, how I got here, my why, and all of that. Case in point, COVID. By the fall, I ended up in the hospital for a week. So the stress levels were really high. Would my organization survive? And I look at so many good businesses and other industries, people losing their homes. It was intolerable to me what was happening, just intolerable. So here we are, and all of a sudden we had one of those businesses that was considered to be too important not to shut down. That was the positive. Then all of a sudden we had people knocking at our door for help. No regulation on how to cope with COVID. None.
Right, right. And you're all about being right there in the moment with people, right? And walking into people's homes. So yeah, not easy.
I had to develop my own policies and procedures. But I also had an opportunity to work in a whole different industry from the state because of worker shortages. And I would have brought in a lot more revenue during that time and would have given me a sense of security because for a while I didn't know if I was going out of business. I'd have to shut the whole thing down. Most people in business didn't know if they were going to be in business.
Right. Okay? We didn't know what was going to happen.
What was going to happen? And you serve lives. Are the workers sick? Are the workers healthy? What is the health status of the client? Am I exposing my workforce? Am I exposing my clientele to unsafe, sick workers? No regulations at that time. So I turned down an opportunity that would, and I took 2 days to consider it, by the way, whether or not to move forward and have another secure, revenue source. And I said to myself, no, I can't do it. I may go out of business, but I cannot do it. Why? Because it's my job to make sure that the people we serve have care they can trust. My job is to make certain that people stay well and safe.
It's not about the money.
The money. Yeah. I had to let it go. I just had to let it go. I had to live with the uncertainty. And that's something I'd like to raise. The ability to live with uncertainty is no easy matter. So I developed my own strategies of requiring masking. And masks were very difficult to get. There was high demand. My office supply people, God bless them, they went at the extra mile and they found some. So we require to this day masking in our workforce all use it while they're in the home. We started policies of if people go on vacation to this day, whether admin, whether home care aide, everybody takes their COVID test just to be sure. Now there are these wonderful 3-in-1 tests. Same thing with the client. If the client is sick, they actually start calling in and say, I can't let this worker come over because I'm not well today. So what we have then is that normative where communication flows all throughout, where people have a voice, where partners in their care. They're not just another revenue source. They're human beings and they know it. And that's the thing that I feel in my heart. It's undeniable. I can't help it. I'm going to start getting teary about it because I feel it so strongly. And I feel really proud of that and really good about that.
Well, I love that. That is awesome. And I love your thing about the community. Yeah. That's really kind of the premise of this whole podcast came from the fact that I was part of Conscious Capitalism. We were interviewing people from around the country, right? Kind of back in the Zoom days when everybody was doing Zoom for meetings. And I was like, how come we're not talking to people from San Diego, right? It's just like you and I sitting here having this conversation. Here's this amazing person everyone should hear about, right? So I believe it's about San Diego. Everything I'm up to is about San Diego. One little quick question here. What do you see? What makes you excited about San Diego? What's your vision for the future for here?
For the community at large?
Yes.
Well,
what excites you?
What excites me?
Can't be the deficit we got or whatever, all these other things we got going on. But what's getting you excited about our future here in San Diego?
I need to give that some thought. To be honest with you, I'm concerned.
Oh, me too. But
so I want to be honest with you, I'm concerned. What excites me is that we have a community of people who are so caring. The caring community, the nonprofit sector, and of course I mentioned I had both at one point, a nonprofit and a for-profit, and then I donated all of the profitability and everything to local nonprofit organizations when I shut the nonprofit down. I didn't benefit one bit, but did start the for-profit. It's an S-Corp, which I still have today. I'm primary shareholder, and I really like it, and at the time I did that, we were starting to grow and banks were not as favorable towards assisting the nonprofit community at that time. And we did need help with funding to continue the growth pattern. What I'm excited about is, again, in the nonprofit sector, and we work with the nonprofit sector, is we have a community that is truly caring of others. It is undeniable. We have great veterans programs. We have a wonderful veterans administration. We have Southern Caregiver Resource Center. We have the Lung Association. We have the Cancer Society. I mean, we have the American Heart Association, all these great groups. we have some of the best nonprofits doing great work, helping feeding people. As a matter of fact, when I was nominated for Woman of Impact this past year, I congratulate the gal who won that. I learned that one of the roles was actually contributing nationally to local groups that feed people. I mean, we have a very caring, we have a very philanthropically minded group of people here in this community. That excites me. We have great educational institutions, wonderful junior colleges, and places where people can become something and learn to become something. We have great biotech and research and development, great hospital institutions, though I think that pretty much everyone is really concerned about that and concerned about healthcare, which is undergoing great paradigm shifts. I mean, there's no doubt about it. What concerns me are the wildfires, the climate change, which is reality, regardless of what political persuasion. I mean, we have Mother Nature, and that concerns me. But we do have groups of people through chambers. I can think of North San Diego Business Chamber has an environmental type committee one can serve on, that there are people who are willing to do things about the problems that we have here in this community. And I feel that we are probably one of the most desirable communities in the country. So how we manage growth, how we maintain quality, how we maintain safety, how we can provide quality health care. I mean, I don't have answers to those questions, but they're things that I am concerned about.
So we got some concerns. We got a lot of good things going for us, and we got some challenges for sure.
There right? you go. Yeah. Yes.
You talk about the community. I mean, it's kind of amazing. My wife runs a nonprofit in PB that supports the homeless, right? It has a drop-in center to connect for services. So we don't do food there. That's not part of the program. That's relief. And but this whole issue with the government shutdown and SNAP going away, my wife put out to the neighborhood, the community said, hey, you know, we need certain kinds of foods that people can walk away with, right? We're not going to become a restaurant over here, but just, you know, you show up here, you can walk away with your tuna or whatever. My wife's office is completely filled with food now. So that's kind of crazy. I mean, the response was just unbelievable. So that's our community.
I think that's a beautiful thing. And it's brought out the best in people.
Exactly.
People helping others. I think it's just a wonderful thing.
Exactly. Well, we got to put a bow on this, Lori. I always like to end with, what's the big idea? What's the one thing you want people to remember out of this conversation?
The importance of ethics. The importance of the Torch Award. How we got the Torch Award. Totally vetted. Our accountant, our banker, clients, employees. There is no shortcut when it comes to ethics. And the higher the standard, the better we all are. You know, we can talk about it, but we need to walk about it.
Yep. Can't just talk about it. You actually have to go and prove it. So good job. Excellent job.
Thank you so much.
Well, Lori, I appreciate you coming in and taking time today. Again, congratulations on the award. That's a big deal. I can see it's very important to you, and it is an awesome thing to be able to
really
win that.
Yes.
But you're doing some amazing work. You know, woman leader has been at this for many years and gone through all the trials and tribulations, and you got an amazing organization having a great impact in our community. So thank you very much for that.
My pleasure.
Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego, for all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best. We're all counting on you.